Today is the sixth day of April Retreat 2017. Day of the Mouse.
Good Friday.
Good Friday.
For the mouse.
For the mouse. Those of you that are fortunate enough not to be part of the chaos. There have been some mice in some of the rooms. There probably are mice in all the rooms. Just on a slightly different note, please can people remember that someone is living in the attic room, which is over the kitchen. And everything that is said in the kitchen goes up to the attic, amplified. And as much as his practice is to take what he gets, our practice is to shut up in the kitchen. I say this every retreat, 20 years, never makes any difference, but it's like to say it. Okay. I got very excited by our questions and answers yesterday. It was so interesting. I spent all night making notes, my poor wife trying to sleep. And I ended up with so much to say and got so excited that I feel I should warn you. The danger signs are there. You'll either speak for hours or speak very fast. Or forget half of it, which is what we hope for. There was just so much that was interesting about that kind of engagement coming out of the silence. Just strong appreciation of the practice, lovely bits of advice, expressions of gratitude, tips for good meditations. There's interesting stuff happening. And of course some talk more than others. Others play a safer game. But the same thing happens in everybody's lives, it seems. And so one of the things is the sort of sense of appreciation and gratitude for the practice that arises. But what happens for everybody, and I mean everybody, all of us, is that the sort of patterns of kind of getting stuck in thinking also appear almost instantly, you know. And that's such an interesting facet of our practice. An example is that the verse of gratitude, repentance, and commitment. We were looking at that, and that was very helpful, by the way. And please extend my invitation to anyone to add to that or to edit it. It's wonderful. One of the lovely things about writing is things that appear and disappear. I've already changed a bit. Couldn't help it. So I must thank you for that. Not that you'll approve or disapprove, but the process continues. But what's most interesting is how for everyone there's a sense of appreciation, let's say, for that part of the evening evening practice, the evening formal practice. And within that, we found something that either troubled us or worried us or that we noticed in some way, and immediately we kind of sort of circled around it. It's wonderful. And sort of drew our swords and rushed in. A lot of energy. And there's something, and it happens to all of us in different ways with different things, that we kind of immediately start referring it to my life. We immediately start kind of closing around it, and we feel, it was expressed a number of times, we feel a bit accused or admonished or reminded of our days at boarding school, and we don't want to be reminded of our days at boarding school, etc., etc. So there's that sort of reaction to a word or a gesture or something that kind of, we react from there. We sort of close down some of the portholes and sort of keep ourselves afloat in that way. It's such an interesting dynamic, and it is the dynamic of our practice. And the koan there, the practice question, the life question, is something like, I'm phrasing it in sort of non-koan language if possible. Well, how is it that instead of saying, yes, I've wasted my life in so many ways, or yes, I've missed so many opportunities, thank you. Thank you for reminding me. That instead of that kind of mode of appreciation, let's say, one reacts and contracts and says, this is uncomfortable, or that would be better, or this would be, whatever it is. This makes me feel like this, that makes me feel like this, reminds me of that, this reminds me of this. And so we sort of back off from the blue sky. And the same, I'm sure Mono won't mind me bringing up his famous phrase now. Why am I here? What am I doing here? With the implication in brackets, you know, no reason found. Yet. Not you now, not here, not yet. Maybe not ever. The bus has left. But it's a great koan, and the dynamic then is, why am I here? The sort of emotional tone behind those words is no possible reason at all, or at least no good reason, you know. Or I want to find a reason and I can't and I feel desperate. So the thinking and the feeling are strongly connected. The emotions fuel the thinking. And we ask those questions. Why? So where are we going to find the answer to that? Where can we find the answer to the question like, why am I here? Where possibly can we find it in thinking itself? We can't think our way out of a question like that. That's what makes it a koan. That's what makes it a life question. Because the answer we have to find in the life beyond that kind of thinking. If we try and think, well, Morne's been doing it for days. 30 minutes at a time. And then he walks. And he thinks about it 30 minutes a day. You know. And we all have a why am I here? You know. Some are making salads. Some are rehearsing talks or something. Some are thinking of grandchildren's treats. And some are sort of designing new algorithms so that more people buy insurance. Everybody's got something going on down the line. You can almost see them, you know, sort of piling up around you as you sit. And some are sparky and some are dressed up in veils and some are like porridge. Charlotte's famous phrase. What's your mind like, Charlotte? Porridge! But she's only been coming here for 23 years. But we all have that sense that the question itself is not just an intellectual question. It's fueled by the emotions of a life question. And it won't be given answers. It won't be satisfied with answers that the head gives us. And sometimes we have to ask ourselves that until we despair. And only when we really despair of finding the answer in our heads do we acknowledge the real possibility that it's found in some other way or in some other place or in some other mode of living. And that's when the question begins to turn. Just like it does in the interview room where we sort of batter our heads against thinking this and thinking that and thinking, and then something else appears. Something else that is radically other, that doesn't come from our thinking and our emotion, doesn't come from our self, what we call ourself. Something else appears. And we say, oh. Thank you very much. And the dynamic of our practice is, of our life, let's say that, excuse me, the dynamic of our life is always like that. We use our thinking, we need our thinking, clearly that's part of being human. We plan, we live our lives thoughtfully. We use our thinking, but the thinking that we use in our lives is optimally very economical, and it's kind of almost has an intuitive quality in it. The kind of thinking that is involved in why am I here, or what's the meaning of this life, or why am I this sort of person and not that sort of person, where's this all going, what is this, who am I, all of that. The kind of thinking that separates us from truly feeling the answer or being touched by the possibilities in that question. That kind of thinking is obsessive, circular, sort of highly charged, emotionally charged, and it's always about me. It's always about me. Even if I'm clever enough to disguise it some way or the other, it's all about me. What do I think? What do I feel? What does someone do to me? What sort of person I'd like to be? What impression I'd like to correct? What difficulty I'd like to get out of? What kind of whatever? Good meditation, bad meditation, endless stuff, endless, 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 endless. That compulsive, addictive quality of thinking is one of the ways the self functions, or perhaps the primary way the self functions. And what it does is it just keeps us closed in on ourselves. And it's just a tightening of the knots. Even if we loosen one and tighten somewhere else, there's the whole pattern. We try and fix ourselves from there. You can't fix yourself from there. You can't pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. If you're a worried man, you're going to sing a worried song. You know that, the wonderful old folk song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Great lyrics. And I can remember them. But the best part is, you're worried now, but you won't be worried long.
Then you sing a worried song.
So, if you're worried, you'll sing a worried song. Okay. Stop worrying, you won't have a worried song. So if we try and fix ourselves from inside this sort of mess, this porridge of thinking and so on, so we're going to do it, trying to fix ourselves in those terms. And that's exactly the problem. We're using the roots of suffering to find the... No, it doesn't quite work. Okay, cancel everything, really. But we all do that, one way or the other. we think ourselves into a problem and try to think ourselves out. But the answer is always radically different. The answer is, I don't want to tie it down in words too much, it's radical, it's completely other, and it's not something that from here, from this contracted state, that we can predict or manipulate or control or render safe or anything, because it is outside of this manipulative function of ours. It's only when this whole pattern, this whole entire thing falls away, that this possibility appears. And as much as we know how it is to have the difficulty, we also know how it is to find the blue sky. We've experienced that. We've known it just for moments in our lives, in the interviews, in our practice. And that dynamic is what we're doing here. Why am I here? Well, the word why, by the way, is always a flag and a koan that if you try and give a reasoned answer, you've missed the point. That we all get tied into these questions in some way, stated or unstated, and the dynamic for the relief of suffering lies in a complete opening. And we can never pin it down from our thinking mind as to how to do it exactly, because it's not within the terms of the thinking mind, the mind of duality. So when we make a commitment to this practice, it's not a commitment to having a good meditation or being mindful or not having difficulties, or not having struggles. It's a commitment to saying, with all of this that happens, there's also something else, something that fills it, that colours it, that a radiance that is not separate from this life of ours, but that appears when we just let go of this tight, argumentative, anxious, fearful self that we all live with. And that's our commitment. It's to just being willing to know that that's always there for us. And that we will do whatever is necessary to get there, or to be part of that, or to be open to that. And in that perspective, whether I have a good sit, whether I worried about this, or whether I think that I'm no good, or whether I feel accused, or whether I feel insufficient, or just fearful about this life, or lonely, or whatever it is. That all these struggles are kind of given meaning and context. They're given meaning in this. And our practice is just to be reminded of this as much as we can. And then to take that into this world of which we are part and live it there. I think you've had enough. Thank you for listening. Let's sit for a few moments.